From KPFK Pacifica Radio, this is Rising Up with Sonali, and I'm your host, Sonali Kolhatkar. You can watch this program on Free Speech TV and listen to it on Pacifica radio stations and affiliates nationwide. It has been months since the CARES Act expired, leaving millions of Americans relying on pandemic-related financial aid without a safety net. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell has made it clear that Republicans will not take up an aid bill until after the election, so that he can either reward voters for re-electing Donald Trump or punish them for electing Joe Biden as president. Last week's presidential debate tackling the paltry federal minimum wage highlighted the dire straits that even those who are employed are facing in the U.S. Meanwhile, billionaires continue to make money hand over fist at a time of national economic crisis. Still, no amount of wishing away the coronavirus will stabilize a volatile stock market. And as the nation enters yet another wave of infections, possibly the worst phase of the pandemic, the economy will not fix itself until both the pandemic is in control and financial aid in place. My guest is Chuck Collins, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he directs the program on inequality and the common good. He's the author of several books, including 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. Welcome to the program, Chuck.
Good to be with you, Sonali.
So first, let's talk about the fact that there has basically been no pandemic-related financial lifeline for Americans since the CARES Act expired. What are Republicans expecting millions of Americans who might still be jobless to be doing? And how do they expect them to be surviving?
Well, I think it is one of the things that happens in this so-called K-shaped recovery, meaning that affluent and wealthy people are doing well, and they're in their own sort of bubbles. And I think these Republicans are disconnected from the experience of 60-70% of the population who are on the verge of a new level of devastation. The CARES Act did provide, that additional supplemental $600 a month relief for unemployed people, and it did inject some money and consumption into the economy. And in a sense, we sort of were able to coast through the fall, into the fall with the benefits of the CARES Act. But now we're at the situation where this is going to be, if there's no action, it's going to be devastating for millions of workers and small businesses.
Rent is coming due, and childcare remains inaccessible. Many people who've lost jobs may never get them back, because many small businesses that closed down are likely to not reopen. So the House passed the HEROES Act. They passed this very ambitious bill. And then President Donald Trump went back and forth on whether he would support it. Republicans also briefly made a case for a much smaller bill and then seemed to abandon that altogether. Depending upon which day you look at Trump's Twitter feed, he either supports the bill or he supports some version of the bill with a stimulus check only or no bill at all. And it's just this wild back and forth flip-flopping. It seems that even the stock market doesn't like that.
No, in fact, I think the now every day that it's clear that there's a failure to do a COVID relief bill, the market is getting more and more volatile. And it even Wall Street with it, and the market is so disconnected from the reality of most people, but they know that if ordinary Americans are unable to participate in the economy, that their households are imploding, they're getting evicted or they're getting foreclosed upon, or they have no money to spend for consumption, that's going to ultimately affect the market and these companies. There's other pieces of this. There's at least 1.1 million state and local workers have lost their jobs. And without some federal aid to state and localities, I think we're going to see even more of those level layoffs. Over 100,000 restaurants have closed. Over 13 million people continue to need some form of unemployment benefits. And then there's millions of people, mostly women, who have stepped out of the workforce because they're at home with children who are trying to sort of do distance schooling and survive, and we're heading into the winter. So the failure of the Senate to act, is the cost of that is just rising daily.
And there are reports suggesting that this pandemic will set back women's equality in the workplace by decades. So here you have a situation where it's kind of clear, even the stock market knows, pumping money into the economy via people's wallets or accounts is a pretty straightforward thing to do. You give unemployed Americans a bunch of money, or you even, you know, give them stimulus checks, although it seems as though the unemployment money was a lot more focused, and they will spend it on necessities, which will then buoy the economy. And if you cut off that money, the economy as a whole falls apart. And yet Trump, who has hinged his re-election on the health of the economy, isn't clear that this is what he wants to do. Mitch McConnell, who wants Trump to win re-election, refuses to continue aid to Americans. Is this a case of ideology, a libertarian survival of the fittest, you're on your own ideology, clashing with the reality of the pandemic?
Yeah, that plus a certain amount of just denialism, you know, in terms of how this is really affecting people's lives. I mean, consumer spending has actually bounced up a little bit with all the stimulus money, with the $600 a month for unemployed families and others. That actually buoyed, you know, and lifted the economy for a little period there. That is not going to continue. So it very much is ideology. But in the end, the Senate made the choice. They wanted to get their nominee through to the Supreme Court, and they didn't focus on COVID relief. That you can see that was their political priority. But many people running for Senate seats are gonna experience. You know, will be Republican Senate candidates will be punished, I think, by their failure to act on COVID relief.
How have billionaires fared during this pandemic? It's a topic that you study quite closely.
Really, since the middle of March, U.S. billionaires, 644 U.S. billionaires, have seen their wealth go up almost $1 trillion. It was $930 billion last week. It's kind of bouncing around, but I expect sometime around the election that their wealth will have crossed that $1 trillion increase mark. And within that, there are what I would call the pandemic profiteers, some of whom have seen their wealth, in the case of like Elon Musk, his wealth has tripled in 7 months. So we're seeing the billionaire class even de-link even further from the rest of society.
So billionaires are making a lot of money, especially those whose wealth happens to be invested in areas of the economy that people relied on more during the pandemic, such as, you know, mail order type goods and services. And Americans who lost their jobs have no lifeline from the government. But even those Americans who have jobs, particularly in the lower rung of our economy, are barely getting by. One of the reasons was tackled at last week's presidential debate, where there was finally a national discussion, or a discussion on the national level, about the fact that the federal minimum wage has stagnated for decades. Were you heartened by the fact that we were just having the discussion?
Well, it's so obviously a problem. So yes, it's heartening. It's clear that the raising the minimum wage is long overdue. It's now almost 12 years since the last sort of meaningful increase in the minimum wage, and that means that people in half the states that don't have higher state minimum wages are still at $7 plus and change an hour, and if you're receiving the tip minimum wage, you're still at $2.13 an hour. So we're It's long overdue, and even with our deepening understanding of the need for to support essential workers, the people who are the most vulnerable, who are least likely to have health insurance and family medical leave and basic protections, these are the workers who are showing up and keeping the economy running, and keeping the online retail centers running, et cetera. And they should be sharing in that, some of that prosperity that these billionaires are taking for themselves.
So increasing the federal minimum wage, wouldn't that too have this effect similar to that $600 a week in aid that, you know, have the same sort of effect on the economy. Because when you increase wages or increase income at the bottom rung of society, where people have not had disposable income to just buy basics or small luxuries, you might have a pretty big impact on the economy as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, it would be a form of bottom-up stimulus. And we should remember that even the CARES Act, only 20% of the funds went directly to workers and their families in the form of direct aid and support. You know, most of the money went to businesses, many of whom were not committing to retaining their workforces. So we can be much more strategic. Raising the minimum wage, making the minimum wage a living wage, would have a huge stimulus effect. It would put money in people's pockets. It would be spent in a local, mostly local economies. You know, when you give a tax break to the Cheesecake Factory or the Potbelly restaurant chain, they're laying off their workforce. So that's money that's just going to shareholders and their management. But if you put both direct stimulus funds or increased minimum wage in the pockets of workers, it has a remarkable, much more effective way of keeping the economy humming along.
Chuck, I don't know if you saw Alex Gibney's new film, Totally Under Control. This was a new documentary made during the pandemic about the pandemic that showed that Trump prioritized fixing the economy over, or rather keeping the economy strong, and meaning the economy for the Wall Streeters and corporate giants, strong, keeping it strong in and ignoring the pandemic and its impact, which in the end had the effect of both ruining the economy, both at the top, both at the bottom in particular, and making the stock market more volatile, and we're left with a pandemic that remains out of control. It seems as though you cannot really bring one in control without the other. You cannot really expect for Americans to survive without bringing the pandemic under control. And even if you just bring the pandemic under control, it's not really going to help unless you offer Americans aid at the same time, right?
Yeah, I mean, there are millions of workers who are in this bind, and including some of my children who are, you know, starting off in life, and they're in the workforce, and they're in this situation where, you know, I've been exposed, but I need my job. You know, maybe I should quarantine, but maybe I need to go to work because if I don't show up to work, I'm not going to get paid. You know, there are millions of those decisions that people are individually making, and government can help that by providing paid, you know, sick leave and providing, you know, resources and testing and contact tracing and all the things that, you know, here we are 7 months later and we still don't have the kind of contact tracing and testing regime that we need to sort of get the economy to go back on track. And I think we should remember, we spend $4 trillion. Only a fifth of that went directly to workers. You know, a lot, you know, but also only about 16% of that went to address sort of the pandemic and provide aid to states and localities around testing and contact tracing. So, you know, we need to have targeted funds to state and localities so they can manage the pandemic and sort of help, you know, intervene to address the health crisis. And then we need more sort of bottom-up support so that people can not be stuck in this bind of having to go to work and be at risk when they've been exposed.
Let's talk about what could happen over the next several weeks and months with the election. If Trump wins re-election, and if Republicans maintain control of the Senate, which from a progressive perspective would be sort of worst case scenario, Mitch McConnell has indicated that there will be a new stimulus bill. And it'll be, you know, of the order of what the Republicans want, maybe $1 trillion. It might, you know, have very strong caps on weekly jobless benefits, et cetera. If Biden were to win, but Republicans kept their control of the Senate, it seems as though Mitch McConnell is just super eager to punish voters, to punish Biden politically. And then, of course, we have the other scenario where Democrats might win both the Senate and the White House while retaining control of the House. From these three scenarios, it seems as though the latter is the best case if for people who actually want to see the economy survive and see their bottom line survive.
Yeah, I mean, what, you know, under this kind of Republican regime, we're just seeing this. First of all, the way they design their stimulus is to be very business friendly and provide bailouts to their corporate cronies. So that's the worst case scenario, is we actually borrow money, but it actually doesn't do anything to address the pandemic or the plight of low wage workers. So, you know, and we're going to go into a lame duck session too, where, you know, inaction will be the rule, probably the default. So it's possible we're still going to go into this winter and see a surge in the pandemic. But there's this optimistic scenario, which is maybe we can get something that looks like the House's Heroes Act, you know, a much bigger, bolder $2.5 trillion intervention that helps states and localities, that helps workers, you know, survive unemployment, helps small businesses, not just the, you know, the bigger companies that have the lobbyists in Washington, but helps the smaller businesses. So I see there's a, you know, an optimistic scenario where we could both see the resources to address the health crisis and the economy, and that we can come out of this in, you know, in the spring, you know, on the road to recovery.
But between now and December, it's very unlikely much will happen unless Trump wins the White House and Republicans keep control of the Senate, in which case we'll get a McConnell-Trumpian bill, which may offer very, you know, small amounts of short-term relief. And the price of that is, of course, another 4 years of Republican domination in the Senate and the White House. But for the long term, if that doesn't transpire, there is no help coming until at least late January. For Americans hoping to survive the holidays, the winter where infections are likely to increase, is kind of it's a horrifying thought.
Yeah, and it just shows the political cost of the games that Mitch McConnell's been playing and the Senate Republicans and where their priorities are. They are negligent in their response, in their duties to this country right now. But it's not even in their interest or anyone's interest to not intervene. I mean, we have the chairman of the Federal Reserve begging the Senate to act. We have business leaders, you know, praying and begging Congress to act.
Because of course even the moneyed classes realize that they can't keep making money if nobody has money to spend at the bottom of our society.
Then as you say, Sonali, it comes back to this ideology. Oh, we don't want to help low-wage workers, you know, give them higher unemployment benefits. They're not going to have the incentive to go back to work. Well, maybe there are really good reasons why in certain settings people should not be going back to work right now. And people need to survive in the meantime.
And there's a really easy solution to giving people incentive. Offer them more money than the government is offering them. That would work too. Finally, what about Treasury Secretary Steven Mnuchin? I mean, on behalf of the White House, he's supposedly been meeting with Nancy Pelosi. You know, he's very much a Trump loyalist. It's not clear what his position or role is in all of this. I mean, we know that Trump rarely has an original thought and ends up having, you know, that is outside of him wanting to retain political power. And a lot of his ideas come from his own loyalists whispering suggestions in his ear.
Yeah, I mean, I think in the case of the Mnuchin, he is actually listening to the moneyed classes. He's listening to Wall Street. Mm-hmm. He's hearing from even people within the Trump, constituency, you have to do something, and not just symbolic. So that's the curious thing, is he's sort of the representative of those interests in the Trump administration. And for a while, it looked like, you know, he actually might be able to bring a deal that then the Senate Republicans could have backed. But again, in their obsession to stack the Supreme Court, that ruled the day, not bailing out America.
If Democrats take control of all three branches of government, do you hope that not only do they pass an ambitious and generous COVID relief bill, but also immediately work to raising the federal minimum wage?
I think it. I could see that happening in the first month, because it's so long overdue.
Yeah.
And historically, it's been a bipartisan. In the end, it's won the day. You know.
I saw a meme the other day that asked, "How many people will Ayn Rand kill?" Her being the libertarian icon that whose ideas have spurred so many Republicans, and who apparently turns out near the end of her life relied on government services herself.
That's right.
Chuck, I want to thank you so much for joining us today. Where's a good website for people to access your research and writing?
Yeah, check out inequality.org. That's the website of the Institute for Policy Studies program at Inequality. And we have a weekly newsletter that documents what people are doing and what people can do. So sign up there at inequality.org and join the effort to reduce inequality.
Thank you so much, Chuck. As always, I enjoyed having you on.
Thank you, Sonali.
My guest has been Chuck Collins, senior scholar at the Institute for Policy Studies, where he directs the program on inequality and the common good. He's written a number of books, including 99 to 1, How Wealth Inequality is Wrecking the World and What We Can Do About It. We've been discussing the ongoing pandemic-related financial crisis and the Republican refusal to take action. I'm Sonali Kolhatkar. We're online at risingupwithsonali.com, where you can sign up for our daily newsletter. Also follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at RU with Sonali.